And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll recap the Giants' 27-23 victory over the Baltimore Ravens. 60? We may need more than 60 with all that happened in this contest. I won't disagree with you from that standpoint, but we will try to jam it as much as possible over the next 60 minutes as the Giants get back to 500. They snap their three-game skid, so they're now 3-3. Quick turnaround week because they're going to head across the pond to London to face off with the Rams. But today we're going to focus mostly on this Ravens game and a number of different facets to this game, Paul, that we certainly want to delve into before we get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants. Giants chat on Twitter as well. Let's start with clearly the player of the game, and it goes without saying that that's Odell Beckham. Two huge touchdowns in the second half, including what turned out to be the game winner from 66 yards out as two Ravens defenders collided near the line of scrimmage and Beckham took it to the house. But, you know, one of the things we've always talked about the last few weeks, Paul, is the offense not clicking, and Ben McAdoo had said he's sensing it break out. Well, second half, and it was a tale of two halves because the offense got off to an extremely slow start. They clicked. They got those big plays that were missing from the game plan and missing from the picture over the last few weeks.
Can we put all the Eli Manning critics to rest now?
I think it's safe.
Can they just go into some closet somewhere, lock the door, and not come out? 32 for 46. What more do you want
from him? Over 400 yards.
Well, two long plays.
Of course.
Kind of skew
three, really.
The yardage.
Beckham had a 43-yard catch.
That's true.
Too. That
was true.
Another one.
That kind of skews the yardage numbers, so I don't want to throw the 400 yards in anybody's face. But the 32 for 46, a pretty darn good percentage. Eli was razor sharp on a ton of throws yesterday. And part of the reason, Giants offensive line gave him more time. Really very simple, folks. And he did it in spite of the fact that the Giants couldn't run the ball worth a damn. Under 40 yards rushing yesterday. Okay? And we always tell you that the run game opens up the pass. Well, you know what? There are instances where you can get away with a paltry running game. Doesn't happen a lot. You don't want to live by that. But it can happen. Yesterday was one of them. Because the protection for Eli, especially in key spots, was there. And then his guys did the rest with the yak yardage, yards after the catch. So credit to the O-line for giving him the proper pass protection, taking credit away from them for not run blocking as well as they should. But then again, Eli made up for it, the receivers made up for it, and the Giants won the game, and the offense had what I would consider to be a good day.
Absolutely, especially with the game-changing type of plays, the big plays, which certainly opened things up in the second half and helped them overcome the fact that they didn't really establish themselves on the ground. However, I will add, the necessity of the run game comes into play with the red zone, Paul. And that's where you maybe put the offensive production under the microscope. You look at first and goal at the one, four opportunities. The inability for them to punch it in, that's where you need the running game to start clicking, and that's what's been the missing element of this offense.
It nearly
cost
them the game.
Yeah.
They left 4 points on the board there because they had to settle for the field goal. First and goal at the one, they run Rashad Jennings. The offensive line loses the battle of the trenches. They lose two, and now suddenly it's second and goal from the three. And what happens, Lance? What happens? Spread them out and go shotgun because they're going to throw the ball. Oh, you know how I feel about that.
Of course. Yeah, listen, first they go at the one, you should be able to punch it in with those first three.
Now,
points.
You know, my problem there is just really simple. It's the offensive line has to get that job done. It is their job to out-muscle and out-physical the Ravens. I don't care how many guys are in the box. It is up to them to get a push on the line. At the very least, get your running back enough room so that he can get back to the line of scrimmage and you can dust yourself off and have second and goal from the one. You cannot lose yardage on that play because on second and goal from the one, you could still line up under center. You could still give them a sense that there might be a run coming, even if you want to throw it.
That they can anticipate it.
But once you lose 2 yards, once you get that negative rushing play on first down, you know the Giants are going to go shotgun and spread them out. I mean, you're giving up half of your deception. So That was really, really bad. That would, to me, outside of Suggs beating Flowers on the sack off of the edge in the positive yardage territory, those were the two most annoying plays to me about the offensive line in the game.
Well, I would agree with you. Suggs had the only sack for the Ravens, just two quarterback hits recorded by the Ravens, and this was a team that came in with 10 sacks, so they had the ability to get to the quarterback. That's why the offensive line deserves a lot of credit for that bounce back.
Flowers held up.
Correct. And in terms of the goal line operation that you were talking about, I just want to set the stage for the listeners and the viewers who may not recall. This was the first drive of the third quarter, Paul. First and goal at the one. 10:44 left in the third because they had a lengthy drive that they put together to open up the quarter. Jennings loses 2 yards on the first play, so now it's second and goal at the three. Manning, incomplete pass to Beckham, left side. And then on third and goal from the three, they try to throw it again, and it was incomplete, short pass to Roger Lewis,
now,
and that settled for the field goal.
There should have been interference.
Correct. That was what you brought up. We were talking before the show.
No question. Sharice Wright was all over him, and it should have been interference. And that would have set the Giants up for another first and goal from the one. I don't even want to think about what might have happened.
Well, but you know what? The penalty or the lack thereof aside, the bottom line is the point is still there. First and goal.
You
got
to get it in.
You got to be able to punch it in. Whether you're getting it based on the aid of a penalty or you're doing it based on you earning the yardage, you still need to be able to punch it in. So that doesn't necessarily excuse the series of plays and so forth in the red zone.
Well, put it this way, okay? And again, I know that the confluence of events gets affected by every single thing that happens, so you can never say it plays out the way that it did. But the Giants won this game 27-23. They left 4 points on the board on that drive, okay? So maybe the score, when Flacco gets it with a minute to go, should have been 31-23, and you wouldn't have been sweating it out, you know, worried about them potentially coming down and scoring a touchdown to beat you.
Well, but on the flip side, remember, Baltimore had an opportunity.
Yes, they did.
And they had 4 chances,
yes,
and the Giants stopped them. By the way, great tackle by Jonathan Casillas to shed one on the fullback and then hustle to the line of to the sideline, and make the play. And you know what actually gets overlooked, Paul? I was looking back at some of the previous games. That's the second time Casillas had a game-saving touchdown tackle.
Yes.
Because in week one against the Cowboys, their opening drive, he stops Ezekiel Elliott on
third
and goal. So that's two now on the season where he's kept the opposition out of the end zone. So that was big key. But the point is, you were talking about how the score changes. If Baltimore, though, punches it in, who knows how the end of the game plays out.
That's true also.
They basically canceled each other out, essentially.
I want to also give credit to Okwara, who helped string that running play out. He was kind of trailing as the ball was getting taken more to the sideline. He would have been right there had the running back decided to cut it up inside.
To come back in.
If he had cut and zigzagged in, Okwara would have been there. But Casillas was the one who made the play. And right behind him, Herzlich.
Yeah.
And he was making sure to hold on the outside so that if the runner had juked Casillas to get to the edge, Herzlich would have been able to knock him out of bounds. So it was a really great effort by all those guys.
Absolutely. Great positioning by both linebackers, because I think you bring up a good point, Paul. If Casillas can't shed the initial block, and he can't
Herzlich,
get over.
Herzlich has the best shot at
him. I think Herzlich was still in position where they could keep the Ravens out of the end zone.
I think so, too.
And prevent Terrence West from getting
so in there.
So that was a huge play, no matter how you analyze it, no matter how you look at it. Now, another big part of the narrative in this game, speaking of the Ravens side, and hey, the Giants took advantage of it because Baltimore didn't overcome a lot of the obstacles that they presented themselves. And that's, Paul, the fact that Baltimore had 15 penalties in this game. And you know what it reminded me of? And I think this is a way to put things in perspective, Paul. What were some of the things we talked about in the Vikings and the Packers games? We talked about the self-inflicted wounds. We talked about penalties on the offense as a whole and on the offensive line. The false starts, the delay of games, where the defense is not doing anything. You're just all of a sudden backing yourself up. Well, you know what? Now the Giants were able to see what happens when the opposition does the same thing and how much that hurts them.
You know what's funny, Lance? We literally could sit here for 3 hours, like as long as the game was, and dissect it, because there were so many angles that you can attack here. You could talk about the goal line stand. You could talk about the penalties that the Ravens had, which were much more self-inflicting than the Giants had. But you could also talk about some bad penalties on the Giants. You could also talk about how sloppy the officiating was on both sides, but certainly seemed to be much sloppier against the Giants. You could talk about the big plays that were made on both sides, because both teams did hit a couple of really big big
Baltimore
plays.
Too. Yeah.
And you could also talk about the schematics and how the Ravens had played primary single high safety all season long, and they didn't really want to get away from it. And even though they mixed in some double safety, they got burned on that single high on the winning touchdown. So there are so many factors we can talk about. And how about one of my favorite subjects, playing above the X's and the O's? Remember, now to simplify that, for those of you who did not watch the show last week and did not hear me go through that, I'm not going to do it again, but in the thumbnail, when you play above the X's and the O's, the fans who are sitting down can't wait to see the replay because you made a special play and you made something positive happen that maybe was beyond what the diagram said it would in the playbook. Well, how many of those plays did the Giants have yesterday? They had more yesterday in one game against the Ravens than they had in the last three games combined, all losses. No coincidence, folks. Play above the X's and the O's. Make more plays. Even if they're not diagrammed, make the play. Beckham turns a fourth and one slant, which, to be honest, it's a quick hitter that Eli audibles out of to guarantee they're going to get the first down.
So you can continue the drive.
And to continue the drive, and maybe, if Beckham has enough room, he gains 15 to 20 yards. But no, because of what they saw defensively and because that safety was playing single high and deep and because the other safety had cheated up, Odell sees this, realizes if he makes that one cut off his angle and then turns on the Jets, he's going to play above the X's and the O's and he's going to go all the way for a touchdown. That's how you win games.
And it came at such a big situational time within the contest, considering Baltimore just scored a touchdown, and now you have an opportunity, at least, at worst case, get a game-tying field goal to force overtime, potentially. Instead, you get the go-ahead touchdown, and then your defense comes through and makes some key stops, even after there were some penalties that it looked like may have impacted the game. For example, the DRC pass interference call, Baltimore cashes in on a touchdown, Giants respond on offense. Then you get another pass interference call, and then you also get the Odighizuwa roughing the passer penalty. So all of a sudden you say to yourself, oh, here we go again, and the Giants defense comes through. I always say this, good teams overcome bad calls or calls that they don't think went in their favor or calls that were legitimate and just all of a sudden change field position. Good teams overcome that.
I believe in that statement, but at the same time, over the last several years, as we have seen the quicksand of parity basically envelope the National Football League, it's not as true as it used to be. It was in the 80s, Lance. In old-school football, yes, you could even have 8 to 10 penalties in a game, but a really good team was going to be able to overcome it. Nowadays, because it's the quicksand of parity and teams are so closely knotted together and they talk about 4 or 5 plays in a game make the difference between a win and a loss, well, guess what? 4 or 5 bad officiating calls can make the difference between a win and a loss. And it may not matter how good you are, okay? It may not anymore because everybody is so closely packed together. The officials are having more impact on wins and losses these days than they have ever had before in the game. That's dangerous.
Well, the Ravens have been playing close games all season long and then some. This is now the 6th game this season that's been decided by 6 points or less. So they know what it likes to come down to the wire. And then take it a step further, 18 of their last 22 games have been decided by 6 points or less. Now, in comparison, how many close games did the Giants play last season too, Paul? And even carried over to this season. So, you know, both of these teams, I would say, have experience in, hey, sometimes one call, one play, one missed tackle could be the difference between a win or a loss. But what I'm saying is it's a matter of going back to what you pulled out, going above the X's and O's to overcome some of those obstacles. And that's what the Giants did yesterday.
They made enough plays. And, you know, I will say one other thing, too. And DRC has really, in my mind, just raised his level of play immeasurably over the course of this season. He has played extremely well, but he has done it while fighting all kinds of nicks and bumps and bruises and pulls and strains and everything else. And on that last drive, let's just not talk about the Zebras on that last drive because I'm going to get myself into trouble. I'm not going to do it.
Well, you're not going to be fine, though, unlike other people. Perhaps.
Yeah, but I don't want to get myself in hot water anyway. Let's just say they needed to be looking a little more carefully at what they saw on the field, especially on that last drive. How about that? This is what I will say. DRC played extremely well on that last drive. And he had a pass defense. He had a tremendous hit to knock a ball away, I think, from Wallace.
That was on the left sideline, correct.
And just rock. And he's not known to be a hitter. And he just separated that ball.
Yeah.
Bang! Wow. The crowd loved it, too. I am really, really impressed with DRC this year. I know he went to the Pro Bowl last year, but I think he's playing his best ball since he came to the Giants. And I think Jenkins is playing terrific, too, despite the fact that he got beat on that one long bomb.
But he had great coverage on another bomb where he knocked the ball away, too.
He did. And quite frankly, most guys on that bomb, it's a touchdown. He made up for it by at least keeping the guy out of the end zone and keeping the drive alive.
And they've needed those two players, considering all the injuries on the back end of the defense. So the Giants beat the Ravens 27-23. For those of you watching on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Meadow, Paul DeTito with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com. We're going to open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Certainly a lot of different elements to go over from this contest, defense, offense, special teams, penalties, you name it. And we'll give you an opportunity to weigh in. Also, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Kevin is in New York City. He gets us going on Monday's edition of BBKL. Kevin, what's happening?
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Hear you loud and clear, Kevin. What do you got?
How you guys doing?
Doing well. How's everything with you?
Good. We attended the game yesterday with my family. We had a great time.
Very nice.
I just wanted to make a couple points real quick. The first thing was, especially in the second quarter, when the offense started going after that. I think the first touchdown was 75 yards, right? Or was it 65? The one that Beckham first
was. First one was 75. Second one was 66.
75, right. Okay. So, you know, what I noticed is, on first down, we usually like to run that, run the ball, do that shotgun run play that we usually do. But, when Eli got in the rhythm and, when we got that quick passing game going, or we were throwing the ball on first down, we were getting, 4 or 5 yards. And I think that, really opened up the playbook, on second and third down. And I thought we did a really good job on third down, especially in the second half. But my main question is, do you guys think that we'll play a faster tempo offense like we did yesterday?
Well, they've been going with the fast tempo in previous games. It just hasn't necessarily always clicked at the right time or early enough where you can then start to build momentum off of that. Your point about the effectiveness of the team on third down, the Giants were 4 of 14 on third down. What I think is important to note, as you alluded to, Kevin, it wasn't so much maybe the effectiveness on third down, because clearly 4 for 14, you need to improve on that. But what
I didn't see that stat, but...
No. Well, it's fine. But that's why I'm piggybacking off of what you said. What jumped out to me, though, and that's why I'm glad you brought up third down efficiency, was compared to previous games, Kevin, what the Giants did effectively is they stayed out of third and longs. And the point is here, and I broke this down, 11 third downs yesterday were for 5 yards or less. So 11 of their 14 third downs, they had to pick up 5 yards or less. If you go back and look at the previous games, it was sevens, eights, nine in terms of the yardage of the distance. So that was a huge turnaround yesterday. They may not have always converted, and that goes back to needing the running game, but at least they weren't in third and longs constantly throughout the contest.
Right, and one more thing, I know you guys were talking about this earlier, it was the officiating. And, the crowd was really upset when, I believe it was the third quarter when Eli had thrown that interception, and it looked like Shepard got his feet tangled, but it might be a little shove in there. What do you think was wrong with the officiating? Because there was a lot of questionable calls.
You got DeTino grinning now, Kevin. I hope you're happy. He's grinning side to side.
The one play that when I was watching the game, like when I saw the highlights when I got home, the pass interference on DRC, they had missed a holding call. On Vernon, I don't know who the right tackler for the Ravens is, but Flacco had a lot of time to throw that ball, and you could see that he was clearly a hold. And then the DRC play, obviously, he was with him stride for stride. I actually think the receiver pushed DRC. So, I mean, I don't know. What do you think was wrong with the officiating?
I think you have excellent vision. I don't think you will need to go see the optometrist anytime soon. And that's good. I think you know a lot about football from that comment. I think that's good, too. It's really best that we don't address these things, because I'm just going to go bonkers if I do. I just think that there were a number of instances yesterday where I'd like to believe if those guys had a chance to review them and look at them again, that they would think differently before they either called or did not call what they saw. And I think that's about as nice as I can be.
But can the Giants, I don't know what the league's rules, can they send a tape? Like,
can they review
it? But
every organization on Monday morning, or if it's a Monday night game on Tuesday, they will send an inquiry of calls that they believe were egregious to the NFL offices and say, look, could you look at this and please explain to us what exactly happened here? What are we missing? What's the justification for this? We'd like to know. And and they will get a response, and this is always done in private. It is never done in public. It is always done in private. And if it does come out in public, fines are handed out. So that's why it's going to be kept behind closed doors. The league will make the proper reviews. They will inform the team, yes, you were right. No, you weren't right. This is what the explanation is for their own satisfaction. Unfortunately, it's never of any good because it will never change a loss or the outcome of a game.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And so in one regard, what good is it? In the other regard, you'd like to think that it's a system of checks and balances that will allow the officiating teams and crews and the officiating department of the league to somehow self-police themselves so that they are more careful next time, so that they do not make the same mistake twice, so that anything that was either missed or a gray area gets clarified, because you want it to be as good as it can be. It wasn't very good yesterday.
Oh, yeah, and one more thing before I let you guys know, this is a quick point for you get to the next phone call. I think our defense has been doing a great job of, you know, having that bend or not break mentality of, you know, keeping up, you know, not giving up a touchdown on the first, because, you know, it was 10-0, as you guys know. They could have been easily 14-0. I think they've done a good job playing red zone defense, and I feel like yesterday was a game. I know the questionable penalties, like you were saying, especially at the end of the game, but I feel like that was a game that our defense needed to win, you know, like a staple win for our defense. But regardless, you know, we got the win. We're 3-3. So, you know, that's, you know, what else can you ask for, you know?
All right, Kevin, appreciate the phone call. When you're -3 in turnover differential, yes, you need your defense to do some of the heavy lifting, and the defense did, but I think what canceled out -3 in turnover differential is when the opposition picks up 15 penalties for over 100 yards. Those, to me, are equivalent, because 15 penalties is the equivalent of about 3 turnovers. When you do the math and you see how that impacts the game and how many drives were stalled by the Ravens as a result of those penalties, you're not going to get that benefit, though. And that's another thing that we didn't necessarily emphasize, Paul. The turnovers have to stop. Whether you play close games, lopsided games, they have to cut them down.
The one pick at the end of the half.
Well, I know, I understand that's but there's still an average of about 2 a game, though. That's still what the average is.
I got it.
When you play it out.
I got it. And I would only say the pick for Eli is, you know, that's one of those that you hate to see on the guy's record because it was irrelevant. And I'm not even 100% sure that the Beckham fumble was a fumble. Now, you disagree with me, and
correct,
that's okay. I'd like to look at it again. I'm not so sure that he had control of the ball. I know Amani Toomer was upstairs in the box with me, and so was Chris Candy. We all kind of smirked at that one. We weren't really sure. And I think I would like to look at that one again. But it was close enough where it probably could have gone either way. And I'm not going to hammer anyone for thinking differently because it was that close.
Well, I told you, it reminded me of the James Starks play in the Packers game, where it was a matter of he got the ball, he turned, he made a football move, he established himself as a runner, and then the ball started to come out. And that's what you need based on the rules. If you go back and look at it, I mean, and you really put it under the microscope,
we'll look again.
See that he does turn and so forth. But
I don't dispute that he made a football move. The question was, did he have full grasp and control while he was making that move? I think that's what I want to look at again. But be that as it may, that's a close enough call that either way it goes, in that type of scenario, a lot of times you're going to say inconclusive evidence anyway on the replay call stands.
And you wouldn't overturn it
so,
anyway.
Right. Yeah. So I'm not really going to gripe that much about that one. I smirk a little, but there were many other instances in the game that had to make you shake your head to the point where it would have popped off your shoulders.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, great to talk to you guys. Yeah, I hate to bring it up, but if the Giants would have lost, I have to blame it on the the Zebras.
Joe, don't go there.
The most egregious play there, I thought. You know, you just want them to be consistent. But the one play, I don't know who the Giants receiver was. The ball was in the end zone.
Roger Lewis.
And I mean, he was pushed. The ball's in the air, and he's being pushed up. He's in the end zone, the receiver, and the Giants receiver's being pushed up to the 5-yard line. You can't miss something like that. That was outrageous. It just disgusts me. And then you want to go over to other games like, oh, my God, look at what happened to the Falcons the last play of the game where Julio
Jones
threw him down.
Well, but, Joe, but see, I'm glad you brought that up. And the point is about putting things in perspective. I understand there's a lot of Giants fans, Paul included, who's worked up about the officiating. But if you see, there's going to be issues across the NFL. It's not just the Giants-Ravens game where you could put the refs under the microscope. It's the human element of the game. It doesn't make it right, doesn't make it enjoyable, but the bottom line is, myself personally, this is why I don't get caught up in the officiating, because I know there's issues in every single game, and it's something you just have to deal with.
I just don't know how you can call ticky-tack stuff like the one on DRC or something, where he
a very subtle call,
and then you miss a play in the end zone like that where the ball's being in the air and the receivers get mugged. I can't understand that. So, whatever, the Giants won, great. You know, they got to continue on playing. Oh, I have to bring up, too, just the differences of the quarterback between last week and this week. And I was so mad in that game, Rodgers. He was so great against the Giants like a magician, and he was worse than Eli in the game against the Cowboys yesterday. I mean, he couldn't hit nothing, fumbling the ball, if you've seen that game. So it just shows, you know, give Eli a break. He does his best, too, you know. So another big thing I want to bring up already, I don't know when the Giants are leaving to go over to London, but I heard the Rams are over there already. You know, they left right. They had a big meal and left to go over. So
well, keep in mind, they're in Los Angeles. So, yeah. I mean, just think about basic geography here. They got to go across the country, then across the pond. So it's a little different in terms of the travel plans and so forth. Yeah.
Well, go Giants. I don't want to hold it up there. Great game. I did want to hear one other big thing here, that the Giants, if they're going to continue, I heard on the post game there that, you know, in the last couple of games they were doubling down on our wide receivers. In this game they weren't doing it as much, where the tight ends and the running backs got to come through on their catches. Oh, and that reminds me of our big tight end there on that one play. Everybody's seen it. He just – I don't know if he was trying to conserve time, but we needed the first down. It was more important there. He missed that.
When he went out of bounds, you're talking about with Larry Donnell. Yeah, and Joe, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
A yard short of the sticks, and Larry looked like at first he wanted to juke the guy, then on second decision he just wanted to get out of bounds, and his first decision should have been just get the first down. I guess sometimes it happens when you're in live action, you don't always put everything in its proper priority, and he should have been thinking first down.
There was also a play, speaking of Larry Donnell, where he went airborne again.
Oh!
And I remember watching that, and I cringed because the ball, there was a point, luckily he had it securely.
Yes.
But he had it out there, Paul, where if the Ravens were in a position, you felt as if they're going to attack that and rip that out.
Let me make something very clear to you folks. Larry Donnell's a really good guy. He's a nice guy. He's got a smile on his face all the time. He's a pleasant fella to talk to. He's not the best blocking tight end in the league. He does seem to like to go airborne as much as a jetliner down at Newark Airport. I don't understand that either. And quite honestly, I can't explain some of what he does. But he's a good guy. And for that reason, I'm just going to say he should have had the first down as his priority in that particular instance, and I'm going to leave it at that.
Yes, well, I would agree with you, but yeah, I got to give him credit. His hurdling ability.
Remember, he was a basketball guy growing up.
No, I understand that, but it's one thing to play basketball. It's another thing to jump over the hurdles.
No,
he went over a defender, and there was no contact. It was clean. I mean, if the judges were on the sideline, I think they would have given him about a 9.5 or a 10 on that. No, Paul?
Larry is incredibly athletic. He really is. And I'll be honest with you, too. He does have a very, very large catching box. You know, you don't have to be perfect in throwing the ball to him because of his height and his wingspan. He gives you a big catching radius to be able to go up and grab that ball. That's his finest attribute. And he's put that to good use on a number of occasions for the Giants. He's also put some of these mysterious skills to good use as
yes,
well.
Which we get flashes of here or there throughout contests. Let's head back to the phone lines. Lance Metal, Paul Natino with you here on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, recapping the Giants win over the Ravens. Ken is in Jersey. Ken, what's happening?
Hey, Paul. Hey, Lance. How you guys doing today?
Doing well, Ken. How's things with you?
Great. Actually, I'll start it off on a light note because a lot of people want to talk about the officials and the calls. I sort of do too, but I adopted a kitten on Saturday and on Sunday in honor of Eli and his 300 touchdown. I named him Eli Meowning.
Interesting name for the kitten.
Yeah. Well, he's
Gong.
And he watched.
Yes.
And he watched a football game with me, so that's a light note. Other than that, the caller before me kind of stole my thunder. The DRC
Relax.
Call was iffy. I did see a little grab of the jersey earlier in the route. I did see that, but I mean, they really didn't need to throw a flag for such a light grab.
Correct. It was subtle. It was very subtle. I think your description, Ken, and I'll let you continue, my initial reaction, I agree that there was a little tug, but it was so subtle that you figure it's one of those calls where, all right, guys are going a little bit back and forth, a good no call, as opposed to then throwing the flag. That was my interpretation of that play.
The contact there was a heck of a lot less than what happened against Sterling Shepard on the interception. Let's put it that way.
100% agreement.
They threw him to the ground to intercept the ball, and nobody had a problem with
it. Apparently, a lot of people saw that, and some people either didn't see it or didn't think much of it.
Yeah. But the main one that almost cost us the game, I think, was the Roger Lewis pushing him out of the end zone with the ball in the air. I mean, the official was standing right there. When I seen her make the signal for clean, I almost vomited. But
you see, I don't even want to talk about this stuff, but they are so obvious that we can't stop people from talking about them.
Well, there were 22 penalties in the game. I think you were obligated to talk
about
them.
And in this case, one that wasn't a penalty.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you folks to do us a favor, okay? We don't have much more time to the show. Let's just talk about plays that were made, and let's not talk about flags or non-flags.
Wow,
because
I don't think you're
going to
get
this
uneasy over this.
No,
amazing.
It's going to – look, I'm, gonna get see, I'm just done with it.
Well,
I'm done with it.
Ken, see, you got to talk more about your kittens when Paul is hosting the program because, you know, he's getting very tensed up as this program progresses.
Well, because there were a lot of really great plays made.
Plays that were made. I was just coming up on it.
I know.
I promise.
So
what
else you got, Ken?
This is the first game I've seen that that the New York Giants noticeably took some halftime adjustments and started chucking the ball down the field. And look what happens when you let Eli unload it. And that's all I got, fellas. Good win. Go Big Blue. Let's keep it up.
I can appreciate the phone call. But what I will say, though, they did start airing out. But as you noted earlier in the program, we were talking about this off the air, there was a distinct difference in terms of how the Ravens attacked the Giants versus the other opponents. So it's one thing to say, yes, Eli took advantage of one high safety, whereas he wasn't getting one high safety when they were going up against the Packers and the Vikings.
He called an audible on the winning touchdown pass because he saw the secondary lined up in what was a very comfortable formation for the Giants to run against. See, this is so frustrating sometimes.
Yeah, relax, they won.
Well, but to try to explain sometimes to these people, guys, sometimes the defense has something there in front of you that you know it's not going to work. You know your play is not going to work, and you try to audible out of it, and they still make a good play because they get paid too.
Exactly.
Okay? How many times have you heard coaches or players say, we'll take what the defense gives us, okay? The Ravens were a banged-up defense yesterday, okay? They were hurting. They were missing some very important players on their defense, which meant that there was going to be a lot of schematic stuff they were going to do, and every time that they got fancy with their schematics, there was going to be at least one hole in their defense. Somewhere, somehow, there was going to be a vulnerability. There was going to be an Achilles. It was going to be up for Eli and his playmakers to exploit those holes in the Swiss cheese. They did it enough of times in the key spots that they had to that they won the game. So it's not about, oh, Eli and the offense and the Giants, you know, just didn't do anything against the Packers and against the Vikings. Yeah, they didn't play well. I get that. But it's also because those were better defenses. Those were defenses that played more difficult schemes with fewer holes in the Swiss cheese for the Giants to take advantage of. Let's make that very clear.
Well, and also keep in mind, Baltimore lost players throughout the game, too.
Yes.
That's another thing. Not only were they banged up going into the game, but they lost Jimmy Smith, their top corner, because of a concussion. Sharice Wright, their other corner, was dealing with back spasms. Gerard Powers got hurt, their slot corner. You take
Doomerville
that into consideration. Doomerville, correct.
Mosley didn't play.
Down two offensive linemen. That has nothing to do with the defense, but just to paint the picture, it was a banged-up team heading in. It was a banged-up team throughout the game. They couldn't necessarily use the same schemes that the other previous Giants opponents
did
had.
Did I not
taken.
Tell you this during the pregame show yesterday, outside on the stage? And, of course, John Schmelk, one of our fellow coworkers, said, oh, you said that against Green Bay, too. Well, what happened? The Giants' offensive line didn't give Eli the time to attack the weaknesses.
Where you got protection and you got a banged-up team.
Now you got the protection.
You had the perfect combo. Yes,
now you knew Eli could take advantage of these guys. It was simple. If the protection was going to hold up and give Eli enough time to throw the ball, he was going to slice through that Swiss cheese. There was not much question about it. He just needed to have the time. He was going to be able to decipher their schematics. That was a given. That was a given going in. He just had to have the time, and they gave it to him.
Let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Mark is in New York City. Mark, what's happening?
How you doing, guys?
Doing all right, Mark. What do you have for us?
Just a couple of quick things real quick. I'm really proud of our $200 million putting forth some stops where we didn't really have to hang our heads low. In a loss, I feel like our defense deserves a lot of quality rest. But I'm kind of getting I could be wrong about this, but I'm kind of getting the idea that Olivier and JPP are playing about. Please correct me if I got this wrong. About 90% of the defensive snaps, and I'm kind of pampered with the four defensive ends from, you know, like 07 and 11.
I hear you.
Have that rest with, okay, I know we don't have a pass rush now, but I believe that's what our problem is. I believe our talent on the field is where all our money is. There's no break when we take them off the field. We crumble.
Well, you are right. You are right. They are playing over 90%, for the season, and it was just about that again yesterday. So I understand what you're saying, but I think, you know, when you look at yesterday's numbers and you see the two sacks and the six quarterback hits and the seven tackles for a loss, it's pretty hard for me to find fault with the front seven yesterday, to be honest with you.
I definitely don't have any issues with them. I'm just feeling like, a lot of people were calling in when we were losing and talking about how we were not getting to the quarterback. And the truth be told is they're grinding us down to the point where now it takes a lot of effort to stop the run. It takes twice the effort to rush the passer.
Yep.
You know, so that was my gripe. When if it's 62 snaps and a guy's playing 56, 57, you know, you know what? This resonates back to where I believe a man named Charles Johnson, like my memory's a little off, but I believe we almost signed him. And
you're
I was
talking about from
what
the Panthers.
He would have done if he was here. And when I see Olivier and JPP out there working like horses like that to the bone, I'm thinking, you know, those 57 snaps these two gentlemen just took, if that was just 30 or 35, that would be a pass rush like no other. I just have that gut feeling. I don't have any math to support that.
There's another factor that's coming into play about what you're talking about. The Ravens ran over 70 plays and had the ball for over 35 minutes yesterday, which meant the Giants' defense was on the field for way more than they should have been. Why does that happen? For a number of reasons. A, the Giants don't have a consistent power running game, so they cannot control the time of possession with the run. They're throwing the ball much too much. B, the Giants' schematics. They want to run no huddle most of the time.
That also speeds things up.
Which also speeds up the game and speeds up their possessions. And Tom Coughlin always used to say, you know, tip tat to Tom. Tom used to say years ago, we really don't want to run no huddle offense as a regular offense because it's going to put extra strain on my defense. So there is a train of thought. There's a train of logic that says, you're playing with a certain amount of fire and risk in terms of wearing down your D when you do things the way the Giants are doing them offensively, especially if you don't have that run game. Now, you can maybe run the no huddle, but if you have that run game, that can still help you out in your time
of
possession.
You're eating up some clock, because the clock is going to continue to run even after you get stops. And also remember yesterday, Paul, a lot of their touchdowns were two plays, and then all of a sudden, long bombs
quick
down
hitter.
The field. So that's not going to give your defense a lot of rest either.
No. So once again, as I said yesterday, I don't know if I was with you or Howard or David, football is a domino effect game. It's a spider web game. Nothing in this game is unto itself and the sole reason for why anything happens. Everything in football, everything is tangled into other reasons and has an impact on other parts of the game. That's why it's such a great game.
Absolutely. Everything's connected. And Mark, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. Want to get to as many more phone calls as possible. So let's stay in New York City and we hit up Brandon. Brandon, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How are we doing? I just want to make some comments. First, I want to say how I really think Shepard and Cruz are the same players. They run the same routes. I think we got to give Lewis and King more snaps because they're able to clear the field more and run different routes. And also, it seems like they only put Lewis in when Odell needs a breather. That's my first thing. Second thing is I think McAdoo shouldn't be calling the plays anymore. He should focus on being the head coach. Give your coordinator at least two games with Eli to produce and see how he feels about it. I think he's messed up a couple times with his timeouts and also the clock as well, so I'd rather him focusing on that. I also do not understand why we still have three quarterbacks on the team. One should just go to the practice squad. I think we should demote Donnell to our third tight end for all the reasons you know that. And I think we should bring Brinkley back, get him off the couch. I thought he was one of the only bright spots last year on our defense. Even if he can't play special teams, there's a spot. You know, we gave him guaranteed money. We ended up losing that by cutting him, and I think we should look into that. And I think the rookies are 4, 5, and 6 rounds. I think they need more snaps as well.
Well,
and
Adams then, has been playing. I mean, Adams and Perkins have gotten some opportunities, Brandon. Now, Perkins has been involved in the run game, and so has Adams has been involved in special teams, and he's played tight end, especially the week that Donnell was hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. But that was when he was hurt, though. I think he should be, you know, you have Ty, and then you have Adams, and then Donnell should be our third guy that goes up and gets the ball in the end zone.
Well, but remember, keep this in mind, Brandon. You know, people also were critical of Will Ty for not hauling in that pass, which was high from Eli Manning in the Packers game. That could have been a game-changing play. So, I mean, I think all three tight ends, if you put them under the microscope, there's room for improvement across the board, especially in the blocking game. And as far as Perkins is concerned, there's also the pass protection concerns. You know, you're not just going to throw out a rookie out there just because you want to see a rookie play. You got to make sure with the offensive line and the protection issues, last thing you want to do is now leave the rookie in there as the last line of defense when you know that Eli needs protection. So you have to take those things into consideration before you just say, oh, well, I'm not happy with how the veteran's playing, so let's just throw a rookie in there.
No, I'm fine with our running backs. I just think he needs more snaps. But I just think, you know, he should be our third tight end is all I'm saying for Donnell. And I just think Perkins needs a couple more snaps. That's it, though. But
all right, Brandon.
And then I think we got to go win 5 straight.
Okay. Well, I don't think anybody's going to disagree with you there in terms of the necessity to start piling up wins and appreciate the phone call.
I think if the Giants had lost yesterday, his list would have been as long as the Tappan Zee Bridge.
It's true.
But they won yesterday. So his list was only as long as half as the Tappan Zee Bridge.
And, I mean, in terms of the roster moves, I mean, it all depends on whether or not the Giants think somebody else that's out there deserves to be brought in. Remember, they brought in Sensabaugh. They've made moves with their roster.
Sensabaugh played a little bit yesterday,
correct,
too,
which
by
was
the
a
way.
Surprise. But remember, if you look at the biggest need in terms of just the injury impact, Paul, it's really been the secondary. because the secondary has been hit the most by the injury bug over the last few weeks. That's why that's had the most movement in terms of Michael Hunter and Andrew Adams and Sensabaugh, all these guys being moved up and down.
I'll say this, despite some up and down play from Andrew Adams, turns out to be quite a fortuitous situation for them that he actually was able to come to camp and make this team, because, you know, him being their third safety, they're down to at that spot. And you know, again, it's been a little bit of a mixed bag, but it could be a lot worse. We saw a lot worse last year when they brought in the likes of Brandon Merriweather, and it just collapsed. And, you know, he's certainly done better than that. And, hey, where would they be without Leon Hall? How about that for a signing? And I know that, you know, it's been a tad mixed with him, too. He's had some good plays, some bad plays, and he did miss a little bit of time as well. But I think you'd have to say that Leon Hall has been a positive addition to this team.
Well, and another player I'll throw out in the secondary, just for the sake of consistency, he's been there for every game, Landon Collins. Now, yesterday, I thought he did a really nice job at the line of scrimmage. He got his second sack of the season. The one area of improvement
Shout
is
out
clearly
to Cannon on that sack, by the way.
He did, and he placed a very nice hit. The key is, though, improvement in terms of down the field. And if you remember the catch that Aiken made on fourth down to continue one of the Baltimore Ravens drives, Collins was on him, and then Aiken pursued the ball, caught Collins off guard, made the catch. So that's where you still want to see some improvement as you move forward.
Second-year player.
Correct.
Understandable. I hope there is still more ups for him. But I will tell you, night and day since last year,
no doubt,
a much better player.
That's what happens when you play all 16 games and you start as a rookie. Now, that was part of it because of the injuries, and also he was one of the most talented safeties on the roster. He deserved to start, but all that experience he gained is now carrying over to this year.
Let's just say that Darian Thompson turns out to be on the same uptick, and we don't know this yet, obviously. You know, his foot's out of the boot now, by the way. Let's just say that he's on the same uptick and shows the same type of value and production that Landon Collins has, but as the true free safety, and Collins is this true strong safety. That could be a heck of a duo for a number of years.
Well, because they were drafted one year after another, which
exactly
means that you're going to have two young guys that you could build around on the back end.
I really want to see those guys blend together. That could be really good.
Well, I would assume that he'll be back right after the bye. I think that's a fair timeline if there's no setbacks or anything like that.
The boot coming off was a big step.
Correct. And then you'll have this game in London, the bye, maybe against the Eagles. It's a possibility, depending on, obviously, how his rehab goes. Let's head back to the phone lines. Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Tony is in Hoboken. Tony, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing? Paul, I so agree with you.
Okay.
Okay.
I so agree with
I've
you.
I've said a lot.
Thompson being there. Thompson would have probably had about three interceptions already.
Oh,
I definitely believe that.
Maybe even more. He's got really good hands, and he's a ball hawk, and he's got good instincts. And every time, I'll tell you what, how about that early bomb yesterday where DRC had coverage, and then Collins was out there over the top as well, and both of them tried to converge on the bomb, and the Redskins, not the Redskins, but the Ravens wound up completing the pass because neither one of the Giants DBs played the ball well enough, and it wound up going for a huge gain. I'm thinking to myself, man, if you got a true center fielder back there playing the ball, that's a pick. Not even a completion or an incomplete. That's a pick.
I think that was the play, the Perryman on the
yes,
opening drive, the 41-yard
yes,
catch.
Yes.
What else you got? Did we lose Tony? Tony,
no,
what else
I'm
you got?
I'm here.
Tony, you agree?
Yeah.
Right?
What else you got?
Oh man, thank God. No, because I have a list, not as big as the other guy, but, you know, I have a list. I do agree that you know, either run the ball more or give the play calling to the offensive coordinator. I mean, you just got to run the ball more, a little more, at least 25 times, just to keep the defense the defense honest.
Well, and it's something we brought up in the Packers game, too. You need balance because you want to keep the defense on its toes. But I think the biggest emphasis, Tony, as I said at the beginning of the show, the running game being effective in the red zone. That's where the emphasis has to be. Yes, you want to be productive throughout the entire field. But when you get down within the five, you want to be able to punch in, and especially when you have four opportunities.
I tell you, the thing that kills me, and, you know, Henry Hanoski's sitting here in the room with us. He's working on some stats and so forth to help out the PR staff. I remember when Henry was playing for this team, you didn't see negative runs. You didn't. You just didn't. I mean, if a defense was good enough to make a stop and make a play, if they stopped you for zero and had a stuff that way, that was about it, you know?
Yeah.
Because when you had Bradshaw or Jacobs running and Henry was here, you know, helping out with the blocking on those guys, you know, worst thing that was going to happen when you handed off the ball was zero, no gain. All right, dust yourself off, set it up for the next play. But when you have negative runs, especially on first and goal from the one, that's bad.
Yeah,
that's bad.
That was bad yesterday. I mean, that call, I actually thought they were going to call a pass on that play, but they called a run. So, but I just have one more thing that I just wanted to say. Like the previous caller, he was talking about, you know, Gerald Adams. Gerald Adams is known for his blocking. And he's fast, and he's showing it every time he's out there. He's improving every time he's out there, the same as Paul Perkins. Just want to know if you have any notes. I actually got to go to work.
All right, Tony.
The answer off the air.
Sounds good. Appreciate the phone call. He was known as a special teams player and a blocker at South Carolina. And we had, remember we spoke over the offseason to his tight ends coach?
Yes, we did.
And he raved and ranted about his production and his improvement throughout the course of college, how he was the type of guy that wanted to play special teams and so forth. Now, that being said, in fairness,
he's not a first-round pick.
Correct.
He is raw.
That, and number two, I was going to bring up costly penalty, or could have been a costly penalty yesterday, we should know, by Adams, offside that continued to drive for the Ravens. It was 4th and 2, 5-yard penalty.
Gave him a first down.
So, you know, those are the things that are the learning curve of a young player. And those are the things that you need to correct and make sure don't happen. But, you know, the Ravens didn't score on that drive, but that was a gift for them to carry out and continue a drive when they were backed up all the way near the end zone.
Perkins is an interesting case because where do you draw the line with him? Because you know that pass pro's an issue. You know he's still got to catch up on some of his study and his playbook stuff. And experience is going to be the best teacher for that. But at the same time, when you have guys like Jennings and Darkwa and Rainey, you know, if you're taking him or putting him on the field, they got to come off the field. And do you really want to do that too much? In my opinion, Perkins deserves a limited package. I do think every week there should be a small package that they should just say, okay, listen, get this package down. Just worry about these 5 plays. And if we get you in for 6 or 7 snaps, you're going to have a limited package of about 5 plays that we'll call when you're in there. I don't think there's enough of tape to let the defense know what he's going to do yet. So you could probably get away with that for a while.
I mean, I think Rainey's done a nice job as a receiver in this offense out of the backfield. So if
Perkins, he's held onto the ball.
Correct. If Perkins brings similar traits to the table, you know, they have to say to themselves, well, the veteran who can pass protect and catch the ball is effective. We don't want to take Rainey off the field.
But I think Perkins is a better run-from-scrimmage guy than Rainey is. I think Rainey is just as effective when he catches the ball out of the backfield. He shows some quicks. But Perkins has more quickness and acceleration on a handoff than Rainey does. And I've said this 100 times, Paul Perkins has a jump cut. And a jump cut is a rare talent in the NFL these days. And you know, he had one on that big screen pass that he took last week.
The Vikings game.
Yeah. Well, two weeks
actually,
ago.
And, you know, he actually did have a play in the
Packer game,
right,
too.
Yeah, he did have a lengthy one against Packers.
He's got that jump cut, which is really special. And, you want to see more of that. I get that.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Leroy is in Delaware. Leroy, what's happening?
How you doing, guys?
Doing well, Leroy.
2 points. The first point is on the Giants, the beginning of the second half, when they had the ball down on 1-yard line, first and goal. I was wondering why McAdoo doesn't put in BD at tight end, and the center from
Brett Jones, you talked about, who played fullback in the Cowboys game.
Put him at fullback. Why didn't
they do that? A Brett Jones fan, and I'd love to see the Giants go jumbo formation in that particular instance. I have not had a philosophical discussion with Coach McAdoo about the jumbo formation. I've known coaches who like it. I've known coaches that don't like it. It's a philosophical deal. It's not necessarily relating to a specific play. It's just a philosophy. Do we like the jumbo? Do we not like the jumbo? Personally, I do. But that's me. I'm going to try to get a hold of Coach Henry Hanoski over here waving his hand, too. He likes it as well. I got to get Coach on the side. I got to ask him about that.
Yeah, because everything else they're trying is not working. That can't possibly hurt.
I hear you.
It's a fair point that you bring up. And we talked about it last week, too. We were discussing about maybe working in some new personnel in terms of those short yardage situations. It's a fair point.
Right. And the second thing is, what happened to Darko Sunday?
How many touches did the running backs have total? 17 carries and receiving out of the backfield. Let's see. Rainey had two. Perkins had two. So that's four. Jennings had four. That's eight. So it's a total of 25 touches by the running backs combined.
Not a lot.
Not a lot. Not a lot. I'll be honest with you. I was a little surprised, if only because Darkwood, to me, had shown some effectiveness in running between the tackles in previous weeks. I would have thought he might have gotten some opportunities in the game somewhere, somehow. But in defense of the coaches, the running backs barely got any touches anyway.
Limited opportunities. And the other thing that I'll add is, you know, and it goes back to the philosophy that Craig Johnson, the running backs coach, said, you know, they don't want to go back to last year where they're throwing in four or five different running backs every game, you know, just to hopefully dig deep into the bag of tricks and make something work. And I also think it has to do with what we were talking about, roles. You know, how we said if Rainey is an effective receiver, then he's going to get the majority of the snaps where you're going to throw the ball. If Jennings is their number one back between the tackles and Darkwa brings similar traits to the table, they're going to stick with Jennings because they want guys to get into rhythm. That, I think, is probably some of the factors that play a role.
I also think they felt after 3 weeks off, Jennings would be fresh and chomping at the bit to go.
Exactly.
Man, I just think Doc would hit the whole lot harder.
Right. Understood.
What else you got, Leroy?
That was it.
All right, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. How about Chris in San Diego? Chris, what's happening?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Doing well, Chris. What do you have for us?
You know, I called last week, and I was pretty critical of the D, but I got to tell you, they really came through. But I want to talk about the significance of that fourth and goal stop. I mean, that was really incredible. And you know, I'm looking back at 07 against Washington, and I think a play like that can set the tone for the entire season.
Kavika Mitchell made the play that year in the Skins game. You remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, can a play like that really, you know, set the tone for the rest of the season, you think?
I'm not much for those kinds of things, especially while they're happening. You kind of look at those things in retrospect, and it's easier to point it out and say, oh, that was the turning point. It's kind of hard to while you're in the moment, to say that that's really going to be something that's going to catapult this team onto a big winning streak. That's really hard to say right now. But was it good? Certainly it was good. I mean, where would we be, though, this morning if they had this great goal line stand and then wound up giving up the winning touchdown on the final play of the game? Where would we be talking, or why would we be talking about the goal line stand?
Wouldn't be talking about it from a momentum standpoint. The other thing I'll mention, Chris, is the Giants coming into the game were very effective in their red zone defense.
They have been.
So it's not as if, and I'm not trying to take away anything from the goal line stand, but I didn't see anything where all of a sudden things are going to turn when they've already been pretty stingy. The opponents, I have the red zone numbers entering yesterday's game, 6 of 14. They were 43%, the opposition, when they got into the red zone. That ranked fifth best in the National Football League. So all that was a continuation of their effectiveness in the red zone.
All right, guys. Fair enough. Thank you so much.
All right, Chris. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
Wow.
Yes. Breathe. 201-939-4513. Before we wrap up, I do want to get to a few tweets because a lot of people who have not had an opportunity to chime in on the phone lines.
I told you we could go 3 hours
today. We could indeed. Absolutely.
I'm exhausted.
I could tell. But I don't buy it necessarily because I guarantee you go into the kitchen, you get some food and nutrition.
I
and then
definitely
you'll be jumping
need
up
some
and
nourishment
down
right
across
now.
The walls.
I badly
so
need
I
some
can
nourishment.
Only imagine that. Moving forward, let's take a look at some tweets here. Jan at Jaff DSN also brings up the point about perhaps working in Will Beattie as a fullback, which is one of the most recent callers had said, or Brett Jones, about trying to get another extra offensive lineman in terms of those short yardage situations. So that seems to be a sentiment that a lot of fans are sharing here after the last few games.
I'm surprised more of them aren't calling for Henry since I told him he's in the room.
Well, listen, Henry's right here. If he wants to suit up again and mess around on the field, I don't know if anybody will deny him that opportunity. to get the trenches working and so forth, because we knew his style of play when he was here. Let's look through Twitter more here in terms of people's reaction. Brent at Brent underscore Tapdat. Roger Lewis needs more snaps, gives a different type of receiver. And it's interesting, Paul, that's the second person. We have a caller bring that up too, that says from what they've seen from Roger Lewis that he brings something different to the table than the other wide receivers. I don't know if necessarily based on his sample size that I've seen that. And it's not taking anything away from Roger Lewis, but do you get that sense that he's different than what those other three starting wide receivers bring to the table?
To me, I cannot take any one of the starting three off the field for Roger Lewis. I just can't do it. I mean, Cruz is too accomplished. Beckham is a superstar. And Sterling Shepard has shown me much too much right now to want to put him on the bench. So if you're going to put Roger Lewis in, then that means you're going to have to go four wides. Okay? And that means either you're going empty backfield or you're taking all your tight ends off the field. That's what it means.
Yeah,
and are you willing to do that? Because that's the only way right now, to me, Roger Lewis is getting in as part of the rotation. Otherwise, like yesterday, he's coming in when one of the other guys needs a rest or has to come out of the game for whatever reason. And that's fine, by the way, because I like Roger Lewis as a player. And I'm glad he made the team.
Well, and here's the other thing. It's a great sign when a player comes out midstream during a game and one of your backup wide receivers can come in and make a play like that.
Yes,
that says something about your depth chart.
Well, we knew the receivers were good.
Well, but the point is that everybody talks about, oh, they should get more reps, they should start. It's not about that. It's about when their opportunity and their names are called that they take advantage of that. And that's exactly what Roger
Lewis did. And we even have fans who want to know where Tavares King is. Well, Tavares King showed that he was productive and deserved to be here as well, but there are so many good receivers on this team, he can't get on the field.
You can only dress so
even
many.
Dwayne
Remember,
Harris.
He was inactive yesterday.
Dwayne Harris is not even getting on the field as a wide receiver anymore, and we know he is accomplished as a receiver. He's good.
Was very productive.
Can't
last
get on
season.
The field as a receiver
though
now.
He's also dealing with the toe injury, so that may be a reason why they want to limit him as well. At Jack in the Box, what is the significance of unsportsmanlike conduct in removing a helmet after a touchdown catch? I don't understand. You're just not allowed to remove your helmet on the field of play. I mean,
well,
that's a simple
rule. Because the implication is that it's insightful and it can be used as a weapon. And so the league put that into effect several years ago and said, you take your helmet off, that's a 15-yard penalty. We do not want to see helmets off because now they can be thrown, they can be swung at somebody, they can be used to hit somebody. It's a bad thing. Don't take your helmet off. That's why the league says that.
It's been a rule that's been in existence, and for those of you who may not add it up in terms of how it's relevant to this game, Odell Beckham was called for that after the second touchdown, so that's why
that is correct.
Was connected to that. All right, so that will wrap up all of our chatter here with respect to the Giants and the Ravens, a lot that we certainly covered over the last hour. We appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Any tweets that we didn't get to, we'll try to answer off the air. Big Blue Kickoff Live is with you each and every weekday, even though the Giants are heading to London to prepare for the Rams in the latter part of the week, but we'll be with you each and every weekday taking your phone calls, getting you set. Last game before the bye is the Giants trying to make it a two-game winning streak before they have some time off. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.